Donna Kitchen talks about food. Donna Lana Kitchen talks recipes. Donna Lana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table, and thanks for joining us today. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donna Lana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Yes. Well, thanks for joining us on a rather dreary sort of January day here.
Another monotonous string of, well, you know, it's almost 30 degrees, though. We shouldn't complain too much. It could be 20 degrees colder and windy out, right?
See, always something to look forward to. Yes, sirree. All right, good. Well, here on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we talk about kind of what's going on. So what's been going on in my kitchen lately? I'm using this great weather to, like, clean things up. And I went through my freezer recently and I made some jam and jelly out of all the stuff that, you know, it just, I had stuff in there. So I made some plum jelly and some crabapple grape jelly. And I had a whole pack
Tomatillos?
No.
Oh, the ground cherries.
Ground cherry jam.
I love the ground cherries.
Ground cherries up the kazoo, and so I made jam and jelly. I just feel so tidy and
well prepared. I want a jar of the ground cherry. Yeah, I'll put my reservation in.
We did a show a couple years ago with our friend Beth Wilburn. We were talking about jams and jellies, and she said she did a lot of jelly making in January because it was a good time to do it, and we decided to call this Jamuary.
Jamuary. Jamuary is almost over.
It is. Well, at this time of year, I want to set out a salute here to the Year of the Rat. We've got the Chinese New Year coming, and a belated birthday. A belated birthday, I think that was last weekend sometime. A belated birthday wish to Robert Burns, the poet laureate of Scotland, who everyone seems to get all excited about this time of year. And I just happen to have found a really interesting Robert Burns night invitation from the year 1896, sent to a Mr. C.A. Nelson, and it was an invitation to a celebration of the birthday anniversary of Robert Burns on the evening of the 24th of January, 1896, in the Hotel Huntington in Fort Scott, Kansas. So in 1896, way out there, they were celebrating. They were celebrating. And
we like these midwinter celebrations, don't we?
And actually, that was the 125th anniversary of Robert Burns's birth, and so I guess they got together, and I hope they wore kilts. Kilts is a good thing, and had bagpipes. But here is a bit of the menu in Fort Scott, Kansas, of 1896. Appetizers: Blue Points, raw.
That's
New York
oysters.
Counts, stewed. We found out that those are oysters.
Oysters too.
And then some sherry. Then we had a boned turkey and cold boiled ox tongue with sauce piquante. Then some port. And some mashed brown potatoes, rice croquettes.
Port in the middle of the meal?
That's what it says, port.
Oh, why not? Okay.
Rice croquettes a la Anglaise, Scotch haggis a la McLean, Spanish puffs. Oh, very
international. Yeah.
And a shrimp salad, champagne punch ending with lemon cream pie and pineapple sherbet with assorted nuts, French confections, French coffee, and fruit. So they had a wonderful time.
That's rather cosmopolitan.
Oh, yeah. They got together, and they, as usual, there's a whole lineup of poems that were read, Scottish airs that were played, toasts and responses, and there was dancing, the Scottish reel, the waltz, the Highland Schottische, the Flowers of Edinburgh, and a polka. So they have everyone included here So, and I hear that that sort of thing still goes on, and it still goes on here. There was a
These are our great Midwestern traditions,
we
right?
We have a great Midwestern tradition. There was a gathering of Scottish Burns, Scottish Robert Burns supporters this last weekend. They raised their glasses, too, and I'm sure they had some Scottish whiskey.
This is put together by Marcus at the Monkey Duck Pub, and he does it once a year. And it is lots of fun.
It is. And it, people look forward to it. And speaking of the world of spirits and whiskey. Now, I know there's whiskey with an E and there's whiskey without an E. And there's all kinds of reasons for that. But we are going to look into the world of spirits. Donna, introduce our nice guest today.
Yes. Today with us we have Darian Everding, who is from the London Underground, and she has been presenting a monthly series titled Women in Whiskey. Mm-hmm. So, Darian, tell us how what you're doing and how that came to be.
Yeah, so Women in Whiskey is a program that I wanted to make whiskey accessible to women.
And this is going on at the as a community event at the mm-hmm. London Underground.
Absolutely. The last Sunday of every month, we get together for a couple hours from 5 to 7. And what I'm doing is bringing in a brand and talking about the women history of the brand, be it women who've saved the company, women who have their hands in production, but showcasing that women have had their hands in whiskey, not only from the beginning of time, but even today as well.
It's I guess that's We get to keep a continue. We make traditions continue, I believe, right?
I like that. I like
so
that.
I went to the last one, which was, pronounce that one. It's a
Lafroig.
Lafroig
was in December.
And it's a very smoky whiskey. Very, mm-hmm. I think it's quite unusual.
Yeah. It's a delicious Scotch whiskey. It's mm-hmm. from the island of Islay. And it shows the history, especially of a woman who saved a company when nobody else was able to.
Okay. Oh. So Scotch whiskey is from Scotland, right?
Correct.
Okay. Then there's bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And
bourbon, rye, scotch. So a lot of these are going to be government-protected classifications of whiskey. Bourbon is the American spirit, so is American rye whiskey. They have governing bodies of law related to them. They're all whiskey. Whiskey means distilled from grain, so grain spirit. That's then aged. But bourbon is made in the United States, 51% corn, and it's got a host of other rules. Scotch whiskey must be made in Scotland. It's a lot like saying champagne has to come from the Champagne region in France.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm glad people are keeping track of this sort of thing.
Well, yeah, it's a unique process. So tell us about the Lafroig, how it gets that. It does not taste like any other whiskey you have ever had. It's very
pronounced. It's peaty. Yeah. So the island of Islay is really unique. It's off the southwestern coast of Scotland, and it's very windswept. There's not a lot of trees. But what they're using for heat sources and fuel sources then on that island is going to be the peat moss that they'll cut in strips and bricks during the summertime. And so in times past when you would be hand malting whiskey, you're germinating the malt to get it to break down sugars. But to do that, to heat the malt to get it to start its eating of sugar and production of alcohol, they were burning peat moss. Well, the burning of the peat moss to heat and then stop the germination of the malt, that's where you're getting that smoky flavor. Some will also say it comes from the air as they're aging barrels on the island, but it mostly comes from the
production. So when they're doing that, so walk us through the process. You take a grain, a specific mm-hmm. grain, and for the Lafroig, what are they using?
So they're going to be using malted barley. You can make whiskey from basically any grain, but they're using malted barley.
So malting. Explain malting, because mm-hmm. that happens in beer also.
Yes. So to make whiskey, you're making beer and then pulling all of the fluff out of it to leave the alcohol.
Whoa.
Fluff.
What's the fluff then?
When you're distilling something, basically anything in your beer that you don't want, you're concentrating the alcohol by pulling the water out, pulling the congeners or flavors out, all sorts of other things. Basically, you're just hyper-concentrating the alcohol.
And that happens, beer is brewed, not distilled, right?
Correct.
So then they take the brewed beer and mm-hmm. then run it through a distilling process?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, so to make the the basic brew of the beer, mm-hmm. you're taking barley in this case,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And you're just putting it in water and adding what?
Yeast.
Water so, and yeast. Yep. And is it in like a big open cauldron thing?
So usually a big vat, yeah.
So it picks up the flavors of the smoke burning underneath it, right?
More or less, yeah.
And then yep. what happens?
So you're taking that distiller's beer, which usually doesn't taste very good. They're not adding flavors. They're not trying to make it taste very good. They just want
hops,
the alcohol.
No hops.
There are some places experimenting with fun additives, but it really doesn't matter. You just want the alcohol. So you take your beer and you throw it into your still. And through that, you're getting out all of the excess, the yeasties that have floated around and created your alcohol, your wort, the mash, and all of the yummy crunchy bits that some places will take. And actually, there's a restaurant in Louisville. They'll take all of that spent grain and make ramen noodles out of it. You can do all sorts of cooking with that, make bread and things too. Once you run that through.
Spent grain, so that means like the barley after you fermented it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just strain the liquid yeah. off, and then you've got the spent grain left.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
So it's kind of like a sprouted barley, basically.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they do. It can be used for animal feed, too. I mean,
most often you'll see, especially a lot of Kentucky distilleries will have partnerships with local farmers to give that as animal
feed. And is that traditional? Like, for example, in Scotland where they were doing it, did they feed the leftover grains to people or animals or something?
I would imagine so, but I'm not 100% certain.
I mean, I can't imagine they'd be throwing stuff away. It's too precious, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. it's quite nutritive. Okay, so then you distill it.
Mm-hmm. So you're heating the liquid and you're heating it to a point where the alcohol will evaporate off, which is a temperature lower than where water evaporates. Water is 212, alcohol is like 187 it. So you're heating the liquid such that you can coax the alcohol off of your water in the still, and you're capturing the alcohol into the neck of the still, letting it bounce around, remove all the weird funky additives that you don't want in your whiskey or distilled spirit in general. And they're going to come up through the neck of the still and then down through a condensation tube where it collects and becomes liquefied again. In Scotland, you might distill it twice. In Ireland, they'll do triple distilling depending on the type
What's
and
the
shape
point
of still.
Of triple of distilling multiple times then?
The idea is you can, one, bump the ABV a little bit more because you're always going
ABV.
To capture alcohol by volume.
Thank you.
You're going to capture a little bit of water and other things in your distillation process mm-hmm. other than just the alcohol. And the other idea is that you can remove more of the impurities.
Impurities being flavor?
Yes, good or bad. And flavor and then other types of alcohol. So when you distill, you've got the heads, the hearts, and the tails. If you're looking at your whole big vat that comes off of the still, your heads is the stuff we talk about people making moonshine and it'll make them go blind. If you don't cut that out, it's actually poisonous. Ooh. Your hearts is the good stuff that you want to end up in the bottle or the barrel most specifically. And your tails, it'll make you sick, give you a hangover.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. So you'll see a lot
so
of companies.
What is in the heads that makes it so toxic?
Different types of, I want to say methyl alcohols. Don't necessarily quote me on that.
Oh, okay.
But things that our body really, really doesn't care for. You'll see a lot of companies, this cut of the heart is really what's going to give you your biggest flavor component. You leave some of the heads in. Jameson whiskey is actually known for leaving just a little bit of the tails in because their whiskey is so smooth that they need some of the bite from some of those other alcohol uh-huh. compounds to balance it out and give you a whiskey that has a little bit more flavor.
So the heads is like rubbing alcohol kind of or something like that. Still alcohol, right?
Yes. And often a lot of the distilleries will take the heads and tails and collect them. And the heads can actually be reused for production alcohol, cleaning alcohol, and things like that.
There you go. Well, goodness. That's why whiskey's got such an interesting taste. Goodness.
Yeah, and that's why it's so expensive.
But, Darian, you mentioned before that you were interested in community development, Main Street development. Mm-hmm. What are you doing now and how did you get there?
So I'm bartending at London Underground.
Community development. Yes.
Absolutely. Much as Marcus at the Mucky Duck has mm-hmm. a pub, the London Underground is a pub as well. We pride ourselves on being a community space. And I found that behind the bar, I moved to Ames to go to grad school and look at community business development because my work experience during my undergraduate years had been more about community nonprofits and small mom and pop gift shops, things like that. And I loved seeing how communities come together from something as small, quote, small, as helping somebody pick out the perfect graduation gift to tell their grandchild that they love them, things like that. There's so many ways to build community. When I moved to Ames, I was planning on going to grad school, and through a combination of health and life and all sorts of fun things, I ended up deciding that grad school wasn't a good fit for me at the time, but I had fallen in love with my job at London Underground behind the bar. I was freshly 21. I really didn't have experience with alcohol. And starting there with the crew, Kyle Maxwell, especially the manager, and Jess Clyde, the owner, having people who pushed me to explore and challenge my brain to not only learn as much as I could about the product behind the bar, but to understand how that affects the community who comes into the pub.
Yes, because it is a Main Street business, and it is a Main Street actually a hub of interesting activity. Yes, you do. They have lots of different events there, for one thing, and women and whiskey is just one of them. I see notices for all sorts of things going on.
Absolutely. Live music, DJs, all sorts of fun things.
I think there was Harry Potter night last week. It was so crowded, people couldn't even get in the door.
Oh. Yep. We're very fond of working with the public library, and that was our second Harry Potter party to support the Ames Public Library.
Ah,
it was lots of fun.
A good way to do this. That's great.
There we got. This is quite a town. We got the bars working with the library.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do like that. I do like that. Yes. So, besides, do people come in and order whiskey or shots just straight? What about mixing them up and making interesting things?
Absolutely. Whiskey has its place in all manner of ways, and I like to encourage folks to sample something neat or on its own without ice, without dilution, without being mixed in. Kind of like knowing your ingredients when you're cooking with anything else. If you know your vodka or whiskey or whatever base spirit, you know how to play with it. Some classic cocktails, Manhattans is whiskey and sweet vermouth and bitters.
Oh, that's right.
It's delicious.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's whiskey.
Old
okay.
fashions. But whiskey can also, there's a lot of flavor. There's spiciness to rye whiskeys. There's a sweetness to bourbon. There's a funky malt to scotch whiskeys often. And using those as key ingredients, one of my favorite cocktails is a tiki pineapple, really fruity drink, but you add just a little bit of smoky scotch to it, and it completely changes the beverage.
Oh, for goodness sakes. And so are there classic whiskeys that go in a classic Manhattan is a certain kind of whiskey, or you play around with it as you wish?
Yes and no. Yes and no. There are certainly classic recipes. Sazerac rye should be in a Sazerac cocktail.
Ah.
But a lot of these recipes are made with whiskeys that we have no recollection of. We don't know what the recipes were. We don't know what they would have tasted like. Manhattan, we can trace it back to like the 1850s, 60s, and it's probably a rye whiskey because that's what Americans were drinking at the time. But our number one cocktail at London Underground is a Manhattan made with a Iowa bourbon whiskey, and it's delightful.
That's right. There are distilleries happening in Iowa. That's pretty good.
One of my old-fashioned recipes is made with a coriander syrup.
Ooh.
I think we've talked about that. Ah. You know, you just take...
Oh, do again. Coriander syrup?
Yeah, you just take a bunch of, not powdered coriander, but whole coriander seeds, and you just, you know, steep them and boil them up with a bunch of sugar and then strain it out. And that goes into with, you know, just a mm-hmm. rocks glass, some ice, the whiskey. And I believe it was an orange slice that we put in it or something.
Yum.
I mean, there's so many... This is what I love about making cocktails. Sometimes late at night, you know, when I don't feel like cooking, but you want to be creative, I get out all my little bottles, you know, and you just, because there's no prep involved except pour this, pour that, you uh-huh. know, dash of bitters, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And then you have something completely unique. It's a little bit of witchery, alchemy.
Absolutely.
Yes, back to women and whiskey. The idea of the woman as the brewer, the herb woman, that kind of goes back a long ways. People brewing beer and brewing whiskey and, yeah, this is good.
Yeah, humans have been having intoxicants for a long time. Oh, by the way, I'm just going to stick this in here. The Ames Historical Society has now up on display a whole prohibition as it happened in Ames, specifically with where you could buy it, where it was illegal, how people responded. It is a very fun exhibit. Go and see it at the Ames Historical Society.
That's true.
It was an attempt for us to not have alcohol.
Alcohol must be good because some people have worked out reasons why we shouldn't have it. I mean,
it does have attendant problems, you know?
It does.
You can have too much of a good thing, that's for sure.
Right, but you don't have prohibition on milkshakes or something. Unless you're on a diet. There you go. Yeah. Same thing. All right. There you go. Well, I'm going to take a little time here to mention this is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Talking to Darian Everding about women and whiskey and drinks and things that may warm our bones this time of year or any time of year, that sort of thing. We mentioned some distilling going on here.
There's a coming and rising and improving distilling industry in the state of Iowa.
Absolutely.
I can hardly keep up with who's doing what.
I don't think I can, honestly. We have a lot of really amazing emerging distilleries. Folks at Cedar Ridge who've already won national level awards at spirits competitions.
Okay, now they make a whiskey, right?
Yes, they make whiskeys. They also have a vineyard, so they also make wines. They make spirits. They age in their wine barrels. They make vodka and gin and all manner of other things, as well as really delicious brandy.
Oh, wonderful. So what vodka and gin, that's clear. What is that? Is that a grain-based thing too?
Yes, usually. Okay. So the process of distilling is going to be generally the same across any type of spirit. What makes whiskey is the type of grain and then that it's aged.
Aged.
So vodka, generally speaking, is unaged whiskey that is bottled at a certain proof.
There you go.
Cedar Ridge is in Cedar Rapids, right?
Swisher, yep.
Swisher, near Cedar Rapids.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Who else do we have?
Oh, we have so many. We've got Foundry Distilling Company in Des Moines, which is a really cool up-and-coming group that's doing some really neat things.
What are they making?
Right now, they have a great vodka out on the market. I think they're also working on whiskey, too. But whiskey takes time to age. So a lot of distilleries will start by releasing those clear spirits to keep themselves afloat as their whiskey is
aging.
And
are these mostly corn-based since we're in Iowa?
I would say largely yes, but Cedar Ridge has a malt whiskey that is phenomenal. It is one of my favorite products.
And malt, so it's got barley in it then, you mean?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Mm.
I would really love to see more Iowa distilleries work with local farmers to explore some more of the native grains here.
We could use more small grains that way.
Absolutely.
And change our
There are distilleries around the country playing with quinoa. Ooh. And adding in all sorts of other grains. Mm-hmm. There's a Chicago distillery using millet to create whiskey. You can use all sorts of different things.
Good use for grain, isn't it? Now tell us about the Mississippi distillery.
Yeah, Mississippi River Distillery. They're a really great group of folks.
Just north of the Quad Cities?
I believe so.
Somewhere.
Just on the river. Quad Cities. Yep.
And actually, one of their claims is that they buy all of their grains for distilling within a 100-mile radius.
Yep.
So on Illinois and Iowa.
Yes. And they claim that for all of their products. Mm-hmm. They have a really beautiful gin, the River Rose gin, which we use a lot.
I love the River Rose gin.
It's wonderful. And it uses rose and cucumber. And they do, as much as possible, source the cucumber locally and as responsibly as possible.
And they have a nice big maybe all of these places have tasting rooms and stuff like that, don't
I would
they?
Imagine so, because alcohol tourism is really becoming the bread and butter of distilling businesses.
Yeah, I've seen pictures and read articles about the Mississippi River one, that mm-hmm. it's quite fun. I keep thinking, road trip!
Right? Right. Well, like Cedar Ridge, they've got a wood-fired oven for some of the best pizzas I've ever had while you're
really?
Sitting there overlooking the vineyards. Yeah.
Wow. So what other distilleries are we
having? We've got folks at Cat's Eye. We've got...
Where's that?
Cat's Eye is also going to be in the Quad Cities area. Then you've got...
And what are they making?
Cat's Eye is right now sourcing whiskeys and working on distilling their own whiskeys. They've got a Cat's Eye whiskey that they produce as well, but lots of other cool products that they're doing. Iowa Distilling Company in, I want to say, Cumming. Some really great folks. They're sourcing some Caribbean rum. They're producing their own bourbon and rye. They've got Prairie Fire is a cinnamon whiskey that is much, 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 much better than Fireball. And I recommend people support local and buy the Iowa version.
Now, do you have a lot of these at the bar that you can pour so we can taste them?
Quite a few. We have a wide selection of the Iowa Gins, the River Rose. We've got quite a few offerings from Cedar Ridge. Templeton Rye, even though they're an Iowa company, isn't – the stuff in the bottle isn't from Iowa yet.
Nope, it's
in
not.
A couple of years it will be. So we'll call them an Iowa company and all sorts of other goodies.
Yeah, they have had a lot of national attention mm-hmm. for their prohibition stories. And it was a little disconcerting to find out, though they claim to be from Iowa, mm-hmm. a lot of it is not produced in the state.
Right. There's a Midwest Grain Producers, MGP, makes about 80 to 85% of the rye whiskey in the United States, and they make really great stuff. But what you're putting in the bottle should say where it's actually coming from. I do have to say the fact that Templeton has decided to put a distillery in Iowa and to make their Iowa legacy more solidly here to support their local community,
That's
to hire
good,
local
because
people.
They,
I have
they
to
use
that.
They use that a lot in their publicity, and mm-hmm. I think they got some pushback and criticism for not being so genuine. So they're fixing that. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Good. Well, we mentioned a little bit about not just drinking this stuff straight, but we talked about some wonderful cocktails that could be made. And
the mixology.
Also,
come on. Here we go. This is the best. Recipes.
People get inspired. And I happen to run across a collection of inspiration for really interesting drinks that come from science fiction literature, and being a science fiction fan myself, I think, Darian, you and I should talk about the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Wait, say that one more time.
Pangalactic Gargle Blaster. As might be expected from a drink invented by Galactic President Zaffarod Beetlebrox, this is a complex connection with many components, not all available in this universe. But there's a magazine called New Science Magazine, and New Scientist magazine. It comes from the UK. And for their Christmas issue, some science writers connected up with a mixologist, a bartender and drink inventor from London named Zoe Burgess. And she deals with things like her centrifuges and vacuum distilling units.
Very
and,
sci-fi.
I mean, all kinds of fancy schmancy stuff. But they came up with recipes. And here's the Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster. 4 patchouli ice cubes made from water and patchouli oil, or 4 ice cubes infused with lemon juice, 5 milliliters of gin, 120 milliliters of tonic water, 1.5 milliliters of a hypermint float, some Fernet Branca mint with 100 microliters of food-grade birch oil. Get a little exotic.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And then, get this, almonds pickled overnight with lemons, if Algonian sun tiger teeth remain unavailable. Yes, yes. And she, this
almonds pickled with lemon.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good,
oh,
I think.
I'm going to steal that for a cocktail mixer,
and,
I think.
This mixer, she's using a centrifugal flask mm-hmm. to mix her stuff up. But still.
Wait. What is a centrifuge flask?
Yeah.
Do you know?
Flask? I'm not sure. I think that they're just using the centrifuge in the flask that contains the contents with it.
But they're spinning it.
So that was something that this one person came up with for the Gargle Blaster. And I trust Saffron Beetlebrox any old time. But of all things, Darian, you said you have your version on the Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster.
I do. When we did the Pub Fiction pub crawl at London Underground, one year we were Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So the Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster is a really fun cocktail because we don't really know what's in it. It's a bottle of Old Jinx spirit. It's water from
What is Old Jinx? What's that taste like?
Well, these are actually – so what I'm going to – this is the recipe from the book. So we don't know. So these components, Old Jinx spirits, I don't know. So
we kind of get to decide.
Different universe. Okay. These are interpretations.
Yes. Yes. Then the water from the seas of Santragenis V. All sorts of these other fun little things. But it must have an olive. That's one thing that we keep track of.
An olive.
So as I was creating the Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster, I wanted to keep all these things in mind. So mine uses Bombay Sapphire Gin. Because gin is one of the ingredients that it does kind of name in the book. Limoncello for a little bit of bright lemon flavor to it. Then I've thrown in some Rumplemintz, which is a higher proof hypermint extract, if you will. It's very, very minty, usually 50%
alcohol.
Okay, so
we've got mint, lemon, and olive going?
Yeah, gin, juniper, then add some simple syrup to sweeten it up. Mm-hmm. Then I add a little bit of olive juice. And then the recipe that you read has Branca Menta. I also use Branca Menta, just a little bit of it. Shake and strain that into a coupe, and don't forget the olive garnish.
Oh, my.
There you go. Well, that's very good.
Well, anything with Freni Branca will kind of it's a very intense, distinct flavor. Do you know in South America, they drink it in Coca-Cola?
Yes, Fernet con Coca. So Fernet Branca is actually one of the things that got me into bartending. It is one of my favorite things ever.
I love it, but it does taste like cough syrup. Like very adult cough syrup.
I always say it's Hall's Cough Drop meets your grandmother's bathroom.
So it's very, very intense.
Well done.
Yeah. And you can just, drink it straight. It's an acquired taste, which I acquired. I must say, I really like it.
We don't have a lot. A glass pretty much does me, but it's a special sort of thing. Also, some more inspiration from science fiction stories. Actually, if you go back to the original books as opposed to the movies, they do kind of get into some of these drinks. There's a Bantha milk from the Star Wars series. And that is a
Bantha.
Yeah, Bantha evidently is a creature on, of course, another planet, which produces blue milk. So there's ways to make that. And there's Battlestar Galactica has a drink called Ambrosia. And from Ursula Le Guin's The Left Hand of Darkness, Gethin beer. Now, The Left Hand of Darkness features a very cold planet where people are always hunkered down. And this drink has, it's kind of like a creme brulee that you drink. It's a real creamy sort of, a double cream, milk, black treacle, two egg yolks, sugar, and then beer with a good malty flavor. And
beer.
And adding hot paprika tincture and some sugar. Put that all together, and it's kind of foamy, and it's kind of
like
this.
You know what it reminds me of? What we do in summer, the beer floats, where we put the ice cream into the beer.
Perhaps.
I mean, it does work. I have to say, I really like them.
So Ginsen beer from the Left Hand of Dark. Any good excuse to come up with another sort of something to tickle our taste buds. And you've had Harry Potter nights, too, and they have something called butter beer? That doesn't sound as good.
Oh, it's delightful.
Oh, what is it?
What is butter beer?
So, well, I can't give away totally
our recipe. Okay.
But start with some cream soda. That's the best basis to make a really delightful butter beer.
Oh, beer or no beer? I mean, is it alcohol?
Yes. What we usually do is add some liqueurs to it. I would say there's butterscotch schnapps is an okay addition. Some citrusy things, liqueur 43. Make sure you don't forget the whipped cream on top.
Yes, yes. Because after all, the Hogwarts are mere young things. You wouldn't want to get them too tipsy. But the idea of butter beer, doesn't that just sound like winter?
Here's what sounds like winter to me. Hot toddies.
Oh, now what the heck is a hot toddy?
What is your recipe for a hot toddy?
So,
it's medicinal, you know.
Absolutely. A little bit of honey, a little bit of lemon, a little bit of whiskey is good for the body and good for the soul, I think.
Oh.
I really like using, we have a bunch of different Littlewoods teas at London Underground, and I love using their botanical blends as bases for hot toddies. The concept of a hot toddy is just...
You can just pour hot water in, but to put a hot herbal tea in it. So lemon, whiskey, and hot water and honey is what is kind of standard.
Yep. Yep, we choose to use tea because that little bit of extra flavor.
But an herbal tea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sweet and spice, things like that. I also do, you can do hot toddies with gin. It doesn't have to be whiskey. So on Saturdays,
what an idea.
It's delightful.
I was challenged to make a gin. Which kinds of gin would you want to use for a hot toddy?
I use Hendrix. Hendrix is the one that I go with, and it works really beautifully.
I like Hendrix. Actually, I've seen there's some new Hendrix flavors out there, too.
Yes. They had some limited edition releases. Summer Solstice was this summer. Orbium is a standard release that...
Orbium?
Mm-hmm. Rather than needing your tonic water, it has the quinine in the gin itself. It's weird.
So do you add club soda then instead of the tonic water?
I add tonic, too, because I like the bitter flavors. Uh-huh. But you can use it then in cocktails to get some of that distinct flavor without needing to dilute the alcohol with
bubbles. Are you serving the Orbium at London Underground?
No, we do not have it right now. We did for a gin tasting that we had, but...
I missed the gin tasting. Will that be repeated?
Probably. We do tastings every month, which is a great way to expose folks to different...
This is in addition to the women in whiskey.
Yes.
And how does one find, I don't want to miss the next gin tasting. How do you find out about it?
Yeah, I would say stop into the bar. We've got printed calendars of all of our events for the coming month. That's the best way. Mm-hmm. The Facebook page is going to be able to link you to our website and online events page as well. Following me on Facebook, I usually share a lot of it as well. So.
Good. So Facebook for London Underground?
Yes.
London Underground, yes.
Absolutely.
Very good. Very good. This is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more about us on our webpage, which you can find at www.khoifm.org. We've got past shows, if you just can't get enough of us. We've got recipes and we've got all kinds of stuff there.
Plug the first show of the new year again, where we talked about the future of food. It's listed on the 2020 page now, and if you haven't heard it, Lana and I, we go on a little rant about where we're going with our food system.
Oh, yes. Keep up on the latest thing. We cover a lot of things here. Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've been talking spirits here, spirits, whiskey, and all sorts of fun things to get us through the winter. I thought we'd have put a little something more solid in our stomach here. I have a recipe for something called skillet spice cake.
Are you suggesting that this skillet spice cake might prevent hangovers?
Oh, well, it's got to. Okay. I got this from a book called Food 52 Baking, 60 Sensational Treats You Can Pull Off in a Snap, my kind of recipes. Skillet spice cake with gooey caramel bottom. And one nice thing about this, you cook this, bake this in a 10-inch cast iron skillet. And I will have this up on the Donna Lana Kitchen website in a bit, as soon as I kind of make sure everything's right here. This pudding-like cake is a close cousin to sticky toffee pudding.
With the Americanization of bottom. Sticky toffee pudding.
A good treat for a cold day. Caramel, melt in the bottom of a 10-inch skillet, 1/4 cup brown sugar, 3 tablespoons butter, 2 tablespoons dark molasses, and this gets all gooey, like you're making.
So you just mix that up, and do you melt it in the pan?
Yes, yeah.
And then pour the batter over.
And it's a spice cake, just lots of spices, cake, flour, salt, baking soda, and black pepper, cinnamon, allspice, cloves, brown sugar, and more molasses, and you melt butter, molasses, 2/3 cup whole milk and some vanilla. You melt all this up and put it in the dry ingredients. That makes your cake. Mix up that batter.
I just want to say one caveat. Usually in those recipes, it is not blackstrap molasses. That is too heavy.
Uh-huh.
Just the regular grandma's molasses.
Yep. I really like the heavy stuff, so I kind of lean toward the heavy. So I do.
Do you actually put it in?
Yeah.
Oh!
This was a, stand up and take notice sort of cake.
I guess you could drink it with Frene Branca then.
You could.
Or blackstrap molasses rum.
Put it in and sprinkle the top with nuts. The original recipe called for pine nuts, and I thought, that isn't very local here. We have pine nuts. And I happen to have a really nice neighbor who has a couple of butternut trees. And butternuts this time of year.
They are so scarce, even though they are local. Good for you to have some butternuts.
That was a good you could put any kind of nuts on the top.
Pecans would be a good substitute too.
And now this kind of looks like it makes an awful mess. It just kind of bubbles up and cook in a 350 degree oven for.
Did you put a sheet pan under it or something?
I didn't. I should have. But I didn't. It didn't go over. It just came up and bubbled and you serve this warm, because if you let it cool completely in the pan, it turns to a rock, but you can put it on top of a burner again
and kind of reheat all that caramel on the bottom.
It suggests serving it with 1 cup whipped heavy cream folded in with 1/2 cup sour cream.
Oh, yum.
Oh, anyway, this is one of those things you pull out of the oven, set on a hot pad in the middle of the table, and have a couple of people with you
and some shot glasses sitting around, right?
Yeah, nibble at it.
Okay.
It's in a skillet spice cake with gooey caramel bottom.
I see that sitting on the table on a night when you're playing cards with your friends with the wood-burning stove going.
Just even that off a little. I'll just have a little bit more. It's quite good. And I always kind of go heavy on the spices. Like a spice cake with a gooey bottom. I suppose you could serve it with ice cream, too. That wouldn't be terribly amiss if you had some ice cream. But that was really good. Anyway.
I'm a big whipped cream fan.
Very good. Mm-hmm. There we have it. So now we've got something to go with our drink. Let's see. What else were we going to talk about with Darian here?
You have an event coming up, and you have one you recently finished.
Yes. We just did Women in Whiskey actually this past Sunday, and we talked about Bushmills Irish Whiskey this coming month at the end of February on the Sunday the 23rd. We'll be talking about Uncle Nearest.
What?
Uncle Nearest Whiskey, which is Tennessee whiskey that has a
Uncle Nearest.
Correct.
Okay.
And what's really cool about that is a black woman-owned business that is revitalizing the story of the slave who actually taught Jack Daniels how to make whiskey. What? So a really important story for us to tell as we talk about the world of whiskey is a little bit more bright and colorful than we're sometimes led to believe.
And this is in Tennessee. And when is this event?
That'll be Sunday, February 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. at London. And the Women in Whiskey events are really casual. Come in, hang out.
Right. You don't have to sign up. Nope. You don't have to. You just show up.
Just show up. Absolutely. The goal behind that was to have a no-risk way to expose people to whiskey and mm-hmm. tell them a couple stories on the way, too.
Oh, the stories are most important. Yeah, people these things are... These are cooks. These are cooks that are making things. These are inventors, and and I like how, like stories and fiddle tunes. Things are passed down ear to ear and tried out, and you are continuing the tradition. Very good. So you
did Irish whiskey.
Yep.
Last week. So, what would be the difference between an Irish whiskey and a Scotch whiskey, other than
an American bourbon? Yeah.
Yeah, so with Irish whiskey and Scotch whiskey, number one, where they're made. Mm-hmm. Number two, Irish whiskey is really well known for their blended whiskeys. Scotland is really well known for their single malts. Now, both countries do produce both. But when what we talked about with Bushmills, with over four centuries of distilling, they're the oldest licensed distillery, whiskey distillery. they incorporate some malt, but they're still blended. So they've got some other grains in there, too. As a rule of thumb, not necessarily law or anything, but Scotch tends to be distilled twice. Irish whiskey tends to be distilled three times. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things in the whiskey industry are rules of thumb. There are laws, but very few and far between.
So name some brands of Irish whiskey.
Well, Bushmills being the one mm-hmm. we spoke about, mm-hmm. Teeling. Jameson is one most people are familiar with. Yep. Mm-hmm. And Jameson whiskey is really the reason we know about Irish whiskey today. They've led to the massive growth that we've seen to put whiskey back on the shelf.
Ah.
Redbreast and all sorts of others. Tullamore Dew is delightful.
Oh, that's right. I've tried that one.
Yeah. My.
Do you ever do whiskey flights?
Yes. At any time you can order a whiskey flight.
Huh. And I suppose there are people who can... Well, just like wine tasters, they can taste the difference. So a flight, you could taste the difference.
The reason I mentioned it is because many, many years ago, I had two lovely South African gentlemen friends. And one night, and they were into drinking their whiskeys, right? Mm-hmm. One night, they, for myself and one of their wives, they poured us a flight. And they just kind of educated my palate. So in a flight... Tell me how you construct your flight and what it does.
Well, I start by asking, what do you want? Because number one, I drink whiskey neat. I drink lots of whiskey. I like all different styles of whiskey. Giving you what I like isn't going to necessarily make you any happier in the end. So starting with, what do you want to explore? What do you want to learn? What do you want to challenge your palate with? Do you like sweeter whiskeys? Then bourbon is probably for you. Do you want to play with some smoke? Then let's go to some smoky whiskeys, some scotches. Do you want to try Iowa whiskeys? We've got more than enough to build a flight with. It really just kind of depends on what you're going for. Mm-hmm. And we tend to build it from there. We have a couple of flights where... we've set up, this is an Iowa flight. This is a good representation of Irish whiskey, or this is a good representation of not smoky Scotch.
Mm-hmm.
But also hopefully help you find something you enjoy.
Well, my friends were, I think at the time, we started with the least expensive and went to the most expensive. And there are wide price ranges in whiskey.
Absolutely.
So they were trying to teach me about qualities, I think, mm-hmm. at the time. But... Actually, the world of whiskey, that was probably 20 or 30 years ago. It's in what we could get in California at the time was not as – the varieties now are astounding.
Sure. Absolutely.
So what makes a very expensive whiskey very expensive?
Marketing.
Oh.
Honestly. So when you're looking at price in whiskey, just like age of whiskey doesn't necessarily translate to quality, price doesn't either. Mm. Some of my favorite whiskeys, Old Forester, which we've spoken about at Women Whiskey before, one of my favorite bottles is like $25 a bottle. It's a great bourbon. It's an affordable bourbon. It showcases great quality.
It's
a lot
from Kentucky?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Old Forester is Kentucky bourbon. it stands up time and again to a lot of the whiskeys that are $100 a bottle. But it all comes down to personal preferences. If what you like is more of the oakiness from age and it's sat around in a barrel for 12 years and you want that dusty, oaky taste, then you might tend towards
those things. Aging would make the price go up. What about the number of triple distilled, or does that make it more expensive too?
It can, yes. It depends on whether or not the distiller wants to pass the buck along, I guess, on who covers the cost of cutting your hearts and tails. So a lot of your bottom shelf $9 a liter sort of bottles are going to have a wider heart. So that include more of the heads and tails that maybe aren't so good for us, which is also why you get a hangover from them.
Oh, yeah. There is that old saw that if you drink cheap vodka, you're going to feel worse in the morning than if you drink the more expensive brands. So there's
there's a lower price area limit. Mm-hmm. But I would say in terms of upwards price, there are some whiskeys that people are charging $400 or $500 a bottle for, and I've been very fortunate in my career to try a lot of rare, expensive, fancy, hard-to-find whiskeys. And with very little exception, I wouldn't say that as a consumer they're worth that money. But I also am more budget-minded, too. So our brains are really cool things, and you know from Kitchen and Food, the way that we perceive value of what we're tasting or eating or drinking affects how we experience it.
This is good. So I wish you all the best in what's going on Main Street. I think the idea of having not only having all these wonderful tastes available, but talking about them, teaching people, inviting people in. This is a wonderful thing that you and the people at the London
are doing. And by the way, the Women in Whiskey is not just for women to attend.
Correct. That is one thing a lot of folks have asked. It's open to everybody. Everybody sharing the stories of women involved in whiskey is valuable. It's a no barriers event. Show up, try something new.
Good. Yes, women have been part of this scene for a long time.
Yes, we are good community builders.
Arguably the very first distillers.
Yeah. Let's talk about it and raise a glass.
Huh? Well,
cheers to that.
Came from kitchens originally, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I believe, yes. Well, thank you for being with us today, Darian. You've been talking to Darian Everding about women and whiskey. Yeah, very good, very good. I will have some, besides all the events at the London Underground, which are always entertaining, there are some other upcoming events coming on at Ada Hayden. Oh, no, not at Ada Hayden, but February 1st at McFarland Park, which is northeast of Ames. Snakes Alive celebration. If snakes are your thing, February 1st is National Serpent Day.
Huh? Oh, are they having snakes?
Who knew?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that'll be fun for the children.
Snakes. Okay, that is February 1st. Learn about snake neighbors in Iowa and meet some real live ones. Yes. You can go to www.storycountyconservation.org.
I'm assuming that's going to be an indoor event.
Oh, at the Story County Conservation Place in McFarland Park.
Yeah.
There's a nice thing there. Yes.
There's a building there.
And on February 2nd, Women in Motion, which is a modern dance company, Valerie Williams has been doing this for years. They're starting their first performance workshop for adult women beginning the 13th season. So contact commotion.org.
www.commotion.
February 2nd. That's a Sunday.
That's one night before the caucus.
Right. You get together.
Can't forget that night.
This is a fine experience. If you have danced before and want to get back into it, do it. If you've never done it before, do it. It's women moving, putting on a show. It's really
fun.
So
you can dance and then you can go
dance
and have some whiskey
and
afterwards.
Oh, very good. Very good. Find out more at commotion.org. It's a fine local dance company. And don't forget, February 3rd. Now,
if you're a Democrat, you better speak up now or forever hold your peace.
And speaking of being the season for a small, stiff drink, I think having the caucuses on a cold February evening. Here we go, folks. Remember,
I believe you go to the caucus, then you go out for a drink, right?
You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Thanks to our special guest today, Darian Everding. We've had original music by Aaron O'Neill and the O'Neill Family Band. Listen to the Donalana Kitchen every Tuesday live at noon right here on this fine radio station. We're all in this together. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering by Cynthia McClure. Eat good food and enjoy life.